Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
We're joined by a brilliant folk singer and songwriter. And I have to say, in these rather troubled times, there's something very, very comforting about the fact she's been tweeting recently about rotivating and planting spuds. Normal life carries on. Kate, it's lovely to see you. Where actually are you? Whereabouts are you? It's in Yorkshire, isn't it?
Yes, I am in a little village just outside Barnsley, and it's where Rusbys have dwelt for hundreds of years. In fact, my dad's traced back, I think, at least 14 generations just in this village.
Wow,
that's
incredible.
Extraordinary.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, what century are we talking about, 14 generations? So
I don't even know. 16th?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Like that.
Yeah,
which is actually as old as our house. That was 16-something that there was something here, you know. It's a really old little village, really. So, yes, there's ghosts and everything lurking about.
And you used to have a studio, didn't you, that your dad had built and your uncle and your sister run. It was a kind of family concern. Have you still got that or have you moved from there?
So years ago when I first started out, and this year we're celebrating 30 years of touring, actually.
Yeah.
When I first made an album, we decided to set up our own record label, but basically because we're from Yorkshire and we don't trust anybody. So we set up our own little label that my dad ran for years and years. And my sister, like you say, has just actually taken over the helm of that, really.
Yeah.
But I bought a place, an old farmhouse with a barn on the side in the middle of nowhere, just about 3-4 miles from here. And so the house was where I lived, and my dad and my uncle converted the barn into the studio. And it was while we were making Sleepless, actually, all those years ago. I think that was 99. And so we would be in, like, through the night, as musicians are, recording, creating, doing all that bit. We'd knock off at whatever, you know, 6-7 in the morning. They'd roll up and then do a bit more on the studio through the day. So gradually the studio was being made at the same time the album was being made. So it was this really lovely,
fantastic
lovely thing, really. Yeah. So we sold that. We had it about 21 years, something like that. But it was just too big, you know, technology's changed and, you know, we've got a family now. And so it was like running up and down. So we can just do most of it from home these days. Yeah.
Well, look, we want to go back and talk about all the records that you listened to when you were growing up. And we normally start with the record playing equipment in the parental home. Can you remember what it would have been?
Well, I have no idea what make it was, but it was really good quality. I mean, my dad was a sound engineer for so many years, at festivals and things, you know. So so it was very good quality, whatever it was. We had no money, but things like that, you know, the important bits, they would be saved for and saved for. So it was a record player. And I remember being allowed to use it. It wasn't too precious, even though we were taught how to look after the vinyl and look after the needle and all those kinds of things. And you had to remember to put the cover back over so it didn't get dusty.
Oh, yeah. Get more bass.
Yeah.
That's right. What records were on it? What sort of things did they play?
They played so mainly folk music, really, because that's where they had grown up. Well, that's what they'd grown up with. That's how they met, actually, my parents. my mum was in a band and my dad had a banjo and a van, and it just was a match made in heaven. And there you go. So all these years later. But so, yes, it was mainly folk music, things like Planxty from Ireland.
Yeah.
A band called Didannan. They were always on. I remember the Paul Brady and Andy Irvine album actually was one of my very favourites. Was that like eight? Oh, crikey, that might have been 70 something also. And who else? Oh, loads of Nick Jones. So Nick Jones was a big favourite in the Rusby House. And actually, excuse me, actually, I still don't leave home without some kind of Nick Jones CD or whatever upon my person, because he is my musical hero. So I had this really rich, diverse kind of music lessons, but within the folk scene, really, from all over, you know, even American stuff, bluegrass stuff and Scottish stuff. So from all over the place, but not really much else out of that, out of the folk.
I can say you didn't rebel against this then, because that's the natural way these things work.
You didn't tear off and read Smash Hits or something, or, you know.
I did read Smash Hits. I used to buy Smash Hits.
Oh, did you?
So
who was on the cover around that time?
Ooh, let me think. So it would have been Aha, probably, around there.
Bon Jovi.
You know, those kinds of things. There was Bross out then. I was not really bothered about Bross, really. But
Aha, you liked, did you?
Hmm?
Who was your favourite member of Aha?
Oh, so it was the keyboard player, actually. I can't remember what he was called.
And nobody can remember his name. How tragic.
Was like the third member of Bross. Yeah. No name.
Finally gets a name check and nobody knows his name.
Oh, God.
That keyboard player from Bross. Yeah, but I just loved their music, you know, their songs. And it felt like they had something to say. And because I'd grown up with this, you know, learning of folk music, it's stories. It's all based around stories and people and humans. And, you know, that is something, you know, like you say, you usually rebel against the music that your parents present to you.
Yeah.
But I fell in love with it because I used to see them like mini films, all the songs, you know. And people often said to me when I'd first started out, you know, why is a young girl from Barnsley singing these songs from 200 years ago? But, you know, for me, they're still relevant. It's about human emotion and we're still doing all the same things these days that we did 200 years ago. So when any kind of music came along in pop music, you know, when I was young like that, I really loved it. And I even loved listening to Chris de Burgh as well, because his songs had stories, you know, like Don't Pay the Ferryman and all that. You know, it was really lovely. So, you know, but I also liked a bit of kind of throwaway pop as well that everybody else likes, you know, just the fun stuff that goes doo-wop, you know. But I really connected with songs that had stories, even from the more popular music scene.
Can you remember the first record you bought?
Yeah.
First single?
Where
bought it, actually?
Yes. So there used to be a little tiny record store in Barnsley called Casa Disco. And back then,
Casa Disco,
and it was tiny, and it had a listening booth in and all. And back then, you could travel anywhere in South Yorkshire for 2 pence on the bus. So I used to take my pocket money. Sorry. I used to take my pocket money and catch the bus into Barnsley. And so when I was buying my first album, it was a Bon Jovi one. And it was it called 7,800 degrees Fahrenheit, I think, was the title.
God, you're asking the wrong guys, but probably.
They'll take your word for it. Take your word for it.
Well, yeah.
What? I might have written that down, actually.
Oh, you got a list. That's brilliant.
Yeah. So I used to go in, and each week I used to pay a little bit off. But and really? Then I remember the day.
So it's higher purchase, effect.
Yeah.
On tick.
We've had loads of these conversations. We have never heard anybody say that before, have we, Mark?
That's incredible. What did you have to pay? So once a week you had to pay, you know, 10p or something.
Oh no. So I used to take some in and gave them a little bit of money each week, and then after like 10 weeks of paying it off, I actually walked out of the shop with it.
That's so amazing.
I didn't have it. Like on lease, yes. I paid a little bit each week. Yeah.
On the installment plan. That's amazing.
That is amazing. Yes. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, and I remember the day I walked out with it, and it was actually on cassette. It wasn't a vinyl, it was cassette. Right. I felt all modern and came out with it in my hand.
Yes. All modern.
Yeah, and I looked at it.
Came out and the tape broke.
Thankfully not. And do you know what? I've still got it somewhere. It's in the house somewhere. And yeah. I have no idea where. It's probably in the loft. I should have dug it out to go, da-da. But that is the very first thing that I bought with my very own money. So
there. Did you watch Top of the Pops and things like that? Or is it? Or were you just getting more immersed in the folk world by then?
I did, but when I was watching Top of the Pops, I just used to get distracted by the people watching the things. And, like, they would be talking and, like, dancing about, and I'd be thinking, what are they doing? They just look really weird and uncomfortable. So that's what I used to watch. It was the back of the people's heads actually dancing. Yeah, yeah. The but if there was somebody in the charts that week that I was interested in, I would definitely watch it and loved it. You know, what a great thing. I mean, we don't have anything like that anymore, you know? So, yeah, it's sad that it went. But when I recorded a song with Ronan Keating, I think that was in 2006, maybe. That sounds a long time ago. But called All Over Again. And it got to, I think it got to number six in the charts, actually, the single charts. So I actually got to be on Top of the Pops.
Oh, really?
It went. So I was like, and I took my name tag off the door, Kate Rusby, Top of the Pops. So I've still got that stuff.
Oh, really?
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Who else was on that show? Can you remember?
Let me think. I think Katie Tunstall was on, actually. That was the first time I met Katie Tunstall. And then I think people that I didn't really know who they were, because I was in my 30s by then, so I wasn't
right. So was that was miming, presumably, on Top of the Pops. You were lip syncing.
I think we actually sung live, to be honest.
All right, okay.
Yes, the band were miming. But I think that we sung live because we did quite a few TV things, and it was a bit of a learning curve for me, because obviously people use in ears instead of actual monitors. And I hate them. They make me fall over. I get quite dizzy because I get shut off. So I had to get used to using them. So, yeah, I had to use those.
So what's so unpleasant about those? Is it just excludes the natural world outside? You can only hear.
Yeah, yeah. So wait. I don't know if you've ever had to have any moulds made for the in-ears. Yeah. So you've got to sit in the room with these, like, rubber stuff set in your ears. And you can't hear anything. And it's you've lost one of your senses, you know, and obviously, and I didn't realise until that moment how much I actually rely on that, even on stage. You know, hearing what an audience member has said.
That's true. You know, I never thought of this before, actually.
So all you're hearing is what is going from your microphone and what anybody's notes are being played. So you lose that
sense of a room, of sense of where you are.
That's
really interesting. Yeah. So when did you start performing yourself?
I started performing the very first gig. So I performed a couple of songs on a youth concert over Cheshire Way because I'd won a competition when I was 16, 15 even possibly, at Fylde Folk Festival. And it was one that my dad used to do the sound at, that it was one of those festivals. And there was these great people that used to run a lot of the youth stuff as part of the festival. And anyway, they said they were having a competition in this pub. So I'd got my dad's guitar from under the desk, this massive red guild it was. I could hardly get my arms around it. And went off up there and played a couple of songs.
What did you sing?
And I won. So what I won with was Boulder to Birmingham by Emmy Lou Harris.
Oh, right.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Which I just loved. So I sung that and won the competition. And it meant I had to play on the final concert in the big hall with everybody else. So I did my slot there and went, oh, that's quite frightening. I don't think I'll do that again. Anyway, then I was at home playing the piano and singing. I'm self-taught, so just messing about, putting songs to chords that I'd made up and that. And a friend of ours called in who ran a festival in Home Firth here. And she said to me, the festival's on in a couple of weeks. You've got all right at that. Do you fancy doing a slot? And my head nodded and inside I was going, shut up, no, I didn't like it before. So I went over, did that, and that was like a first slot on a festival. I think I played for half an hour or something, but again, I was nearly sick beforehand. I could hardly walk on for one.
And you were how old? 15, you're saying?
I went 16, 17, 16. Something like that by then, yeah. So
what do you think about nervousness? It's interesting, this, because I think Laurence Olivier said, if you're not nervous, you're not trying. You know, it's you know, performers are nervous, aren't they? You know, no matter how many times you've done it.
Yeah.
You never let it stop you doing it, did you?
No, I mean, there's been times, you know, when there's been a lot of stress and anxiety in my life that I've had to kind of deal with. And that's the other thing about musicians, you know, and singers. When you start talking to people about anxiety, you know, around performing and touring, and it's all that thing about the tiredness, you know, and you don't realize how it's affecting your body. And then you'd start going, oh, what's going on? And then you get in worry and then anxious about it all. But as soon as you start talking to people are going, oh, I've had that, or I feel that, or do you get this? And so it's a thing that is actually in the touring world, you know, and it's a really funny thing that people don't talk about it. But as I've got older, I don't mind anymore. I don't care, you know, about being judged or whatever it is. And I always think, if I can help somebody else, you know, I'll come here, let's have a sit down, a cup of tea, and I'll talk to you about it. And I've handed out books that helped me over the years. So some points in my life, that side of it have kind of got me, and I've been stood on stage going, oh, I can't breathe. But like you say, I've always finished a gig, you know? And
yes. Yeah.
You know, it's
an amazing thing.
What's the biggest crowd you've ever played in front of? Can you remember?
I think it would probably be at, so we did a BBC Radio 2 used to, and I'm sure they'll start it up again since COVID. They used to do a thing called Party in the Park, I think it was, or Festival in the Park. Yeah. And it was at Hyde Park.
Yeah.
And we were on the bill. It was probably about 10 years, 8 years ago, something like that. And we played, and it was, you couldn't see the back of it. I mean, it was just absolutely huge. And it was the biggest thing. But again, you know, and again, very nervous about it. But and also because it was televised, so it's not even the audience that are there. It was like, whoop. And I knew that all my lot and all the village here were all watching and tuning in. So when you know that, you're just like, ooh. But
when you're playing amazing. A small club, you obviously you can read the audience reaction really clearly. But when you're playing a big crowd like that, how do you get any sense of whether or not you're going down okay?
Well, I suppose when we went to play that, you know, we weren't the main acts. So there's a little bit of pressure off us. I think the chorus were finishing off the night that we played.
As long as nobody throws a plastic bottle, you're probably all right. Yeah.
But I've never been one. I don't have a false sense of grandeur, really. You know, I know where we were on that. And I know there would have been mostly the people who were there in that audience would not have had a Scooby who we were. So if any of them turned around and had a listen, you know, that was great.
You're winning. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and it went down great, you know, and we had so much positive feedback from it, and new people that had discovered our music from it. So you just kind of, and my thing is to, you know, I always talk to the audience also, you know, obviously it's a big thing, you can't talk much, but talk to people, bring them in, you know, this is who we are, this is what we do, and that settles me also. And yeah, but it was, what a thing to do, it was just amazing, brilliant.
So when you're playing an average gig, you know, club or small theatre or whatever, are you looking at the audience, you can see the audience, I want to ask you this question, do you address yourself to the people who don't appear to be having a good time or the people who are having a good time?
Yeah, do you try and win over the people with their arms crossed?
Because there's always somebody who looks fed up.
Entertain me.
Am I right?
Yeah.
There is always somebody who's fed up. And for some reason, they always sit on the front row. I don't know why.
Like, they've come with the person who's enjoying it.
Because their girlfriend has dragged them along or whatever. That's right.
Yes. Yes, and they are the ones. So usually we can't, you know, when we're playing in a theatre, you can't see much of the audience, really. I mean, we do like to have the lights up slightly so that we can, but you can't really pick out individual faces or expressions totally. But like you say, there is always somebody sat on the front row who is not having a good time, who's just like looking away and arms crossed, like you say. But whenever we perform songs like, so I wrote a song about a superhero from Barnsley. I wrote it for my girls, but it became a whole song. And now he's got his own little website, you know, and a video and all that, and animation. But I wrote this song called Big Brave Bill. and we usually do it at the end of the night if it's on the set list, that tour. And there's a bit of superhero flying involved in it, you know, and I teach them the chorus and we get involved. And that's the one that I always look at the person, you know, are they doing it? Are they doing
it?
And yes. Without doubt, they're there singing along at the end, doing the flying and all that. And we've not lost one yet. So proud. Yes, it's just amazing. When you get that one, it's like, I've got
it. Yeah.
How do you deal with the kind of, I mean, the photography nowadays is just a fact of life, isn't it? That people are, they got their phones out or whatever. Have you reconciled yourself to that or?
Yes, I suppose so. But then also the size of theatres that we play, you know, there's ushers around the side and they do sometimes, I mean, I have noticed them sometimes, you know, walking in and saying, could you stop doing that?
Oh, really?
Okay. It's distracting the person behind, because obviously when you've got your phone up taking a picture, it's
lit,
isn't it? Yeah. So the people behind are then distracted. So I don't really mind about that, really. But when it's off-putting for other audience members, then it's a bit annoying, isn't it? But I think
it also must reduce the amount of applause because people are filming or they're just holding a phone, you know. It must...
Oh, yeah. I've not thought about it like that, yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, I'll have to say, could you put your phones down to clap, please?
To clap, that's right.
It's like never perform in front of people who are holding a drink because they can't clap. Yeah, it's as simple as that.
That's true.
That is really true. Well, what I do, if I'm in those circumstances, watching somebody stood up and I've got a drink, I always do the old ring on the glass clap.
Oh, right.
Hinting, yes.
That's good. So tell us about some of those records that you, just favourite records in your life, to things that have meant a lot.
Yeah. So Penguin Eggs by Nick Jones, that is
fantastic.
One of my very favourite ones. But then also, I mean, the less well-known ones, he made an album called Noah's Ark Trap, which I just adore. There was a song on there called The Wanton Seed that he's got this like really cool kind of reggae feel to his guitar part, you know, and he'd obviously been listening to reggae at that time. So that one I just absolutely adore. There's another one of Nick's called From a Devil to a Stranger, which is just one of my all-time favourites also. But then when getting a little bit older, going back to getting the bus into Barnsley, I used to go to Barnsley Library, and on the second floor, within its own glass room, they had the most amazing music library. So I used to go there quite a lot when I could, and you were allowed to take 2 or 3 cassettes out each week. So I would go in there with my library card, and I discovered all sorts. That's where I discovered Nancy Griffith, and I remain such a massive fan. I mean, I own all of her albums and was so sad to hear her passing. But I just... you know, she also was one of those people, like probably Last of the True Believers might be my very favourite album of hers. And she had that way of writing. It was so real, you know. She used to sit and watch normal people going about their business and then write the most amazing, honest songs about them. And the way she sung as well, she really got stuck into it, didn't she? And you could hear the emotion in her voice, and it really grabbed me. So I discovered Nancy there, and like I say, since then got all her albums. And also Lyle Lovett, he's one that I discovered there and just totally loved. But then also there was people like Alison Krauss. You know, I first came across Alison at Edale Bluegrass Festival. My dad used to do the sound there. And it was literally on the Thursday, they would shove the cows out of the barn, give it a once over with a bit of like flash. And there was a festival in, but they would invite a band from America over every year. And I saw like Del McCoury band there. And like I say, this year, Alison Krauss's band were there. So I can't remember what album it was that they were touring at the time, but I think I was about 16 then, but just fell in love with her singing and her music. And again, when I could afford it, I bought all her stuff too. So
and Dan Kaminsky too, he's fantastic in that.
Yes, absolutely. And also Ron Block on banjo.
Yeah.
He's become a great friend of ours. He's played on my last few albums, actually, Ron. So it's funny how things come back around, you know.
And yeah.
We often sit up having a glass of wine reminiscing about Edale Festival and how strange it was, but fabulous. Yeah.
Dan Kaminsky does this thing on stage where he always talks about when he got that job being the voiceover for George Clooney on Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And it's about telling his wife. He said, so I'm looking at, I'm hearing your voice, but I'm seeing George Clooney. She said, this is my fantasy.
Really, poor Dan. I know. Yeah, I mean, but that's how I kind of explain him on stage, because Dan actually sung on an album of mine, and actually we've redone that song. It was a song called Only Desire What You Have, and it first appeared on my Life in a Paper Boat album, and we've kind of rearranged it, redone it for this 30 album, and we've kept Dan's vocal on it because I loved it so much. So when we're now touring the songs that are on the 30 album, and you know, that's how I kind of explain who Dan is. You might not know who he is, but you do. So, you know, and I say that, do you remember Oh Brother Where?
Yeah.
When George Clooney opened up his voice to sing, that's Dan, and you can hear him.
Yeah, I know. Incredible.
Oh, right. I know that voice, right? Yeah. No, he's brilliant. He's just amazing. What a singer. Just astonishing. Yeah.
And there's a long tradition of that, isn't there, really, in musical films where the actor is, you know, the voice, singing voice has been provided by somebody else, doesn't
yeah.
it? A West Side Story. All yeah. Those kind of things.
Yeah. They still do it now, don't they? I'm sure.
Do they? I don't know. You might be right. I don't know.
Sure,
it's an interesting question.
I'm sure I heard somebody talking on the radio, and she was the voice of somebody in The Greatest Showman, I think.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh,
well. I might be wrong. I might be casting aspersions there. I don't know.
So did you go away to college and so forth?
I was a very strange child that I didn't quite know what I wanted to do. You know, I would sit at home with my guitar, you know. Well, it was actually my dad's. He taught me three chords when I was about 14. I'd learned to play the fiddle from being around six, seven, something like that. And I learned at school, like classically, but I really didn't like it. And but my pet, like I was saying earlier, my parents both sing and play. My dad plays the banjo and mandolin, string stuff like that, and my mum plays piano, accordion. So, you know, I would come home and we'd be on a weekend, and my dad would get the banjo out, you know, and he'd say, come on, get your fiddle out, I'll teach you this tune. So that was my love, you know. I would be doing this piece of classical music at, you know, lessons at school, and I've got to do it for another 30 weeks because my bow wasn't going in the right direction or something. And I just switched off and lost interest in that side of it. But at home, I could play. Nobody cared which way my bow was going. I was learning, listening and learning. And yeah. I've always been a bit rubbish at reading and reading music. I can do it, but I'm very slow. And I never understood bass clefs. It's like when I got to fractions. Oh, my word. No, that's it. I've lost interest in maths now. So I always did everything by ear, but which kind of held me back for doing any, like, GCSE music. They would let me take the exam, but with focusing a bit more on the performance side and the listening exam, but they would only ever let me get up to a grade C. They wouldn't let me have a B or an A, however good my answers were or however it was. It was just the rule then. I'm sure it's changed now. But, you know, at that age, all my friends were going, oh, I'm taking these subjects because I'm going to be this or that. And I was going around going, how on earth do you know? Like, we're 14. How do you know what you're going to be, or 15 or 16? So they all knew. And I just took the subjects that I enjoyed, you know, art, drama, music, biology, things like that. And, you know, when I was coming to the end of my schooling, I had no idea still what I wanted to be. And we have a brilliant performing arts college in Barnsley. Back then it was called the Electric Theatre. So you go there when you're 16 for 2 years. And I did a BTEC in performing arts. But I specialised in the drama, because I'd already done a lot of you could specialise in the music, the technical side, dance or drama. Drama was the only one I'd not done much of, really. So I did that. And again, you know, I enjoyed it. I wasn't very good at it, but, you know, I just got on with it and loved it. But it was while I was there that our friend asked if I would go to Home Firth to do that gig. And when I came off the stage, there was somebody else there who ran another festival down south in Sidmouth, which is quite a big festival. And he said to me, oh, I really enjoyed that. Do you fancy coming to Sidmouth next month? And again, it was the head nodding, saying, oh, thank you very much. And I'm going, shut up. And I went and did that. And somebody else asked me. And it was this really organic thing. And then when I'd finished that course at college, I thought, you know what? I'll just give this a moment and see where it goes, because I still have no idea what I'd do at university. And in that year, so many more people, like folk clubs and things like that, asked me to play. So I thought, oh, I'll have another year out and see where it goes. And I never went. So it just chose, right, really. Yeah.
So folk clubs were your university, really, or college or whatever?
Folk clubs and folk festivals as well. Yeah. And to be honest, it was where I was so happy, because I'd been taken to so many of the festivals already and folk clubs, because my dad did the sound, you know, and I used to go and help him, and I used to love sitting and listening, you know, to whoever was playing. So I was really but I never thought for one minute when I was younger that that's what I would end up doing. And I do feel it chose me rather than the other way around.
I don't know if you noticed, we appear to have lost Mark Ellen. This is the first time this has happened. He's obviously had some technological challenge that he couldn't overcome. No, we're still here.
I just realised, there he is.
Coming back. Hi, you there, Mr. Ellen?
So sorry.
Join hands and see if we can contact the recently departed.
I'm so sorry.
There you are. You're back.
There I am. I didn't know what happened. The signal suddenly went.
It's all right.
I'm sorry. Did you pause or did you carry on?
We kept going. We just noticed that you'd gone.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so sorry.
Kate was talking about how she didn't go to college, but folk clubs were kind of became her college, because one thing led to another. So you're currently on tour.
Yes.
Is that an extensive tour?
It is. So we tour until the end of May, the very end of May, and then we have a little bit of break from it because the obviously took touring the album, but then also there's so many gigs in this year and also in next year, because of course 2 years worth of gigs have been rolled over. So, you know, at the age I am now, I have to do like 4 gigs and then go home for a few days and then go out again. But we can't do that this time. So there's so many gigs that had kind of rolled over. So I'm really looking forward. I mean, we've done 3 or 4 of the tour so far, and absolutely loving being back in that situation of playing and performing. And, you know, still hear people are a bit tentative about buying tickets in advance. So it's a nervy time if you're promoting your own gigs, which is what we do. You know, we've done that for years. So So it, yeah.
So how do you do that, promoting your own gigs?
Well, you
just got a list of venues and you just ring them up and say, we can come on the Wednesday. Is that how it
kind of, yeah, it's like that. We decide when we're touring. We know geographically where one might sit after another. And we work about 18 months in advance. And it's literally that, getting in touch with the venue, saying, can we hire your venue? Because that's what we end up doing now. Because when I'd kind of done the folk clubs and things and I'd kind of outgrown them. And again, it was so organic. You know, too many people wanted to come to the gig and they couldn't buy tickets in advance because folk clubs didn't work like that. And I just felt awful, all these people who didn't get in. So we did the local arts centre and then again, that was full. So we built up like that. But when we got to the theatres, we would ring people up and they'd say, oh no, we're not going to book folk music here. Nobody comes to folk music. What are you talking about? So we then we went, well, how much is it to hire? You know, so we thought, well, let's take a risk. And that's what we've done ever since, really. Yeah, but most of our gigs we've put on and we look after, and yeah.
So do you do your own merchandising and all that kind of stuff?
Absolutely, because we still have our own record company, so we get all the albums printed and the T-shirts and all that kind of stuff, and we go on tour. And actually, it's my nephew that comes with us to sell the merch. And
I was going to say, it's got to be a family. It's always a family member.
Yeah. Are you still doing the Underneath the Stars festival? You are, I think, this year.
Yes. Yeah. So we only missed one. Thankfully, we still went ahead with our festival last year, but we changed it. Usually, it's in massive marquees. So because we like comfort, and the audience do, you know, and we try and make the sound as good as it can be, and all that. But last year we had to go with one huge outdoor stage, so people just had space, you know. I mean, but then you're open to the elements, of course, and in Yorkshire it rains quite a bit. But
yeah. No, I will not have that said.
Does it?
Yeah. That's Lancashire. the Pennines, that's where all the bloody rain is.
Yeah. I think it just blew over. That must be what have happened.
Well, look, we traditionally finish these chats by asking people to tell us, what is the greatest record ever made? Do you know the answer to that question, Kate?
There is no wrong answer. This is an education for us. What?
I have so many answers, and it's impossible to choose, as I'm sure it would be for you.
Yeah, give us your top five.
Oh, top five. So, being records as in actual tracks.
It can be LPs.
Singles, albums, whatever. Tracks?
Greatest album ever made, I would go for Last of the True Believers by Nancy Griffith. Yeah, I just absolutely adore the songs on it, the way she sings. She was in a prime then, you know. It was just absolutely beautiful and gorgeously produced and just amazing. But if I was having to choose one song, it would either be Sally Wheatley by Bob Fox and Stu Luckley. I don't know if you've heard it.
No.
Bob Fox is one of the greatest singers ever on the planet. He's a traditional singer from up in the Northeast. And he has he sings like a bird, is how I can only describe it. He's one of those people, when you see him sing, it is no effort at all. This voice just comes out. He's always banging tune. His decoration that he does, it's like he was just born to sing. And Bob Fox and Stu Luckley Stu Luckley is also from up in the Northeast, and they were a duo back in the 70s. So I think that album was 1978, it came out, that Sally Wheatley is on. And it's the two of them. And Stu Luckley plays acoustic bass, and Bob plays guitar. And they do a bit of harmonies with each other as well, but Bob sings Sally Wheatley. And it is just, it breaks your heart to hear him sing it. And it's one of those tracks, when you hear it, it never dates because it's so amazing. It'll never go out of fashion. You know, it's one of those that is just so brilliant. And I listen to it now and it still makes me cry. Not because the song is so sad, just because it's so beautiful. It's the most beautiful piece of music that I think I've ever heard. So
I should go immediately to listen to it. Yeah, that's a brilliant description.
We'll dig that out. Kate, it's been lovely to talk to you. As we always say, good luck with the tour.
Yeah, good luck with the tour. Climbing on Wogan.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.